Insurance company versus the medical lien management, medical lien management incorporated. May I have the entry of appearances first for the petition?
Yes, Terrence Ridley, part of 1522, attorney on behalf of Allstate Insurance Company, with my associate.
Thank you very much. And for medical lien management?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Zachary Muggy, number 35821. And with me is Laura Ellenberger on behalf of medical lien.
And will you be doing all of the arguments yourself?
I will.
Same with you. Okay, thanks. Counsel, this case is in fact set for an hour. So you each have a half an hour as a result. You'll need to keep track of your time, so if you want to have anything in reserve.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And then whenever you're ready, Mr. Ridley, you can go ahead.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. At core, this case is about whether this Court should or should not expand the law of assignments in Colorado, whether the Court should allow assignments of non-existent proceeds that may or may not be derived from a settlement agreement not yet in existence, and whether such purported assignments should bind a non-party insurance company, such as Allstate, who in this case fulfilled its quasi-fiduciary duty to its insurer by paying the injured party directly. Here, at the time that Mr. Martinez signed the contract, and Your Honors, when I refer to the contract, I'm referring to the document that's entitled Lien and Security Agreement. There was no settlement agreement with Allstate. There was no present right of ownership to any agreement by Mr. Martinez involving Allstate. And certainly there were no proceeds in existence at that time. These facts, I think, are critical because if there was no settlement agreement and if there was no proceeds, there's only one logical way to view the contract, and that is as a promise to assign in the future. Aside from the opinion from the division below, there is no precedent in Colorado that holds or even suggests that a promise to assign such future potential proceeds from a settlement agreement not even in existence can bind a non-party. As the Supreme Court of Ohio, one of the few courts in the country to take this issue head on, said in the West Broad Chiropractic case, and I quote, "A person who has been injured in an accident but who has not yet established liability for the accident or present right to settlement proceeds may not assign the right to future proceeds if the right does not exist at the time of the assignment." Restated, before someone can assign proceeds from a settlement agreement, the settlement agreement and the proceeds need to be in existence. Now,
let me just interject there. Doesn't the Ohio Supreme Court rely on its Thatcher decision, which is arguably different from how the law has evolved in Colorado in terms of the assignability of causes of action?
Yes, Your Honor. There is some reliance on the Thatcher decision, but I don't think that changes the underlying fundamental reality that exists that both courts have bought into, and that is that if there's no proceeds to assign, and equally as important, no underlying settlement agreement, then there can't be a binding settlement, there cannot be a binding assignment on a non-party to the agreement. So if you contrast what the division below did to the In Re Marriage of Lapera case, which is what brings us here today because the medical lien management division below, that decision conflicts with the Lapera case. In the Lapera case, which has very similar facts to what happened here, that court, in very simple logic, basically said, citing what was then Section 154 of the restatement, that if there are no proceeds to assign and no underlying settlement agreement, then what you're dealing with is a promise to assign proceeds in the future. And there, the Court of Appeals found that the assignment was ineffective as to the claim being made by Mr. Lapera's former wife, who had a claim assignment to wrongful death proceeds. So A few basic facts, just to put this all in perspective. There's not much of a record here, Your Honors, but we know the following. We know that Mr. Martinez was in a car accident. We know that he was allegedly struck by Ms. Helen Clifford, that this occurred back in October 2005. Ms. Clifford, significantly, was the Allstate insured. And about a year and a half later, in March 2007, Mr. Martinez signed the contract for the benefit of medical financing business, medical lien management. The record does not explain why he was seeking to enter in that arrangement about a year and a half after the accident, but he did. The contract purportedly assigned proceeds from a then unidentified insurance company, and the agreement directed both Mr. Martinez and his lawyer to pay medical lien management directly. Some medical care was provided. That's in the record. The underlying tort suit against Ms. Clifford significantly was brought directly by Mr. Martinez, not by medical lien management as assignee of the claim, but by Mr. Martinez directly. We do know that some notice was given to Allstate. We know that Allstate satisfied its positive fiduciary duty under the Trimble case, the 1985 landmark decision by Justice Kirschbaum, by paying Mr. Martinez and therefore taking care of its own insurer. I think that's very significant. After that direct payment, this lawsuit was filed. And in this lawsuit, medical lien management has sued both Allstate and Mr. Martinez. Allstate was sued for breach of the alleged assignment agreement. Judge Hagman of the Denver District Court granted Allstate's motion to dismiss on various grounds, but significantly, he found that medical lien management did not possess rights beyond what Mr. Martinez had. Now, I'd like to talk about the alleged or purported assignment agreement or the contract, but first I think there's a few principles of assignment law that might be helpful to the court. And definitions in a case like this, I think, are very important. There's not a lot of guidance from prior Colorado precedent, but there is some. And I'd like to begin with the Ford v. Summertree Lane case, decision of the Colorado Court of Appeals, 2002. Judge Jones, in that case, dealt with an assignment of a chosen action. And when it came to definitions, what the court said in that case was, to constitute an assignment, the subject matter must be described with such particularity as to render it capable of identification. And it went on and said, a vague, indefinite, extraneous description will not be considered sufficient identity. This is what we refer to as the rule of particularity, which has been recognized in the law of assignments. This court, in the case of City and County of Denver v. Jones, 1929, said that wages are assignable as a chosen action, but under an existing contract of employment. And it further stated, and I quote, under the rule that a mere expectancy or possibility is not assignable at law, an assignment of future wages is invalid where there is no contract of employment in existence. And that in existence phrase is important because it comes up in a couple of other cases, including the Farmers Acceptance v. Delosier case, 1972 opinion by Justice Erickson. He recognized that assignments related to contracts, the underlying contract needs to be in existence. And it's Hornbook law that an assignment involves a present transfer. In some cases, talk about an immediate transfer, such as the Oglesby case that we've cited in the briefs. A contract, on the other hand, involves a promise of future performance. And coming back to that Ohio Supreme Court case, the Westbrook case, there the courts have stated that a vested right in the assigned property is required to confer a complete and present right on the assignee. And then lastly, Your Honor, just in terms of some basic principles. The division below correctly stated that the general rule is that the assignee stands in the shoes of the assignor and takes only as good as the assignor had. Significant in this case, that's the Tivoli and McCormick cases. Now, turning to the specific language of the contract in this case, it's just a one-page document. It's found on page 43 of the record. The specific language is important, Your Honors, because it shows that when you read this as a whole, it really does amount just to a promise to assign. It does not amount to a present assignment of proceeds. Generally, it's a document that's written in very broad terms. There's no amount stated in it. The document at points speaks in the future tense in terms of what's going to happen. So, for example, it's for services and surgeries performed and to be performed. And the agreement, quote, may, but is not limited to fees and costs originating from evaluations and other services rendered. The first paragraph specifically says that Mr. Martinez is still on the hook. He's on the hook for the underlying debt. And not only that, but he's on the hook for 18% interest on the amount of the services rendered in the event that there's no settlement. Now, that's a significant fact. If this were an actual assignment, meaning an immediate transfer, why would there be any interest provision at all? One does not charge interest to oneself on an assignment, but yet that appears to be what's going on in this paragraph one. And I would submit that that's consistent with anticipating future conduct, that this is a promise to assign proceeds in the future. Next is paragraph three. What do we learn from this paragraph? This paragraph is significant because it actually contemplates that there will be or could be a direct payment to the assignor. It says that. If this language, and the language, by the way, as the Court of Appeals recognized, was drafted by medical wing management, these words count. All right? So somebody could pay directly to Mr. Martinez. And if that was not intended to apply to the insurance company, well, why didn't it say so? And that ties into the next provision, paragraph four, which is also significant in terms of the intent behind this document. Paragraph four addresses who is actually required to pay medical lien management. And there's important language here again. With respect to Mr. Martinez and his lawyer, the language is instructs and directs. Mr. Martinez and his lawyer are instructed and directed to pay medical lien management and proceeds that may come out of the a lawsuit or a settlement. However, with respect to Allstate, it doesn't say Allstate specifically, but with respect to insurance companies, all it does is authorize. So there's a change in the verbiage. The verbs as to the assignor and his lawyer is you're directed to do this. With respect to the insurance company, it's, well, you may do that. And that, again, is, I think, consistent with the promise to assign. Why? Because it's a recognition that a lot is going to have to happen here before Allstate or an insurance company actually is going to have to pay. So it recognizes, I think, that Allstate and insurance companies are not bound and cannot be bound because there's no settlement proceeds and there's no settlement agreement. And finally, Your Honor, paragraph five. It says that no supplement, amendment, or modification of the agreement is binding unless it is in writing and signed by the patient and medical lien management. And that never happened at any point after the original contract was signed. So, what are the main takeaways from this contract? At the time the document was signed, there was no settlement agreement, there were no settlement proceeds. There was no present ownership interest in any contract. I think the timing, Your Honors, is critical because if there was nothing to assign, if there was no underlying settlement agreement, the only logical way to view this contract is as a promise to do so, promise to assign proceeds in the future.
Counsel, can I stop again?
Sure.
I think what the Court of Appeals seemed concerned with is that, or how I read it, is essentially we allow people to assign proceeds from potential settlements or lawsuits all the time, and they have a whole slew of string sites to that effect. I'm wondering how do you distinguish your case from that?
Yes, Your Honor, and you're right. There's a string cite of cases that medical lien management has cited in its brief, and that, in fact, that the Court of Appeals has cited. And these are includes the Leon case from New York, the Bonanza Motors case, I think it is. I believe it may be out of South Carolina. But there's a string of these cases. And almost all of these cases can be easily distinguished because the defendant in these cases is the lawyer or his or her law firm. It's the person who was involved directly with the preparation of the document. So it's, and in a lot of these cases, it's the lawyer who either prepared the document, assented to the document, or in some cases actually signed the document. So as the direct agent for the assignor, the courts have found that the lawyer is going to be on the hook. And in addition to just that relationship, I mean, the lawyer being right there and being involved and knowing what's going on, several of these cases, the Bonanza Motors case, for example, is a good example, they look to the independent duty of a lawyer when it comes to how these proceeds are handled. Sometimes in those cases, Your Honor, the plaintiff's lawyer would argue that, well, my only duty is to my client. And the courts have said that's not true. As an attorney under the Code of Professional Responsibility, when you are entrusted with a settlement fund and you've been right there in terms of drafting that assignment document, you better distribute it the way you said you were going to distribute it. So virtually all of those cases, Your Honor, are distinguishable. And my question would be rhetorically is, where are all the cases? Where is the string cite saying that in a case like this, where there's no underlying proceeds, where there's no underlying settlement, that an insurance company is liable? There is no such string cite. To the extent there's a string cite, it's in our briefing. So in terms of the takeaways from the contract, runner, I would say, first of all, Mr. Martinez remained on the hook, and there's this 18% interest clause. Secondly, non-parties could pay Mr. Martinez directly. That's contemplated by paragraph 3. That Allstate was merely permitted or authorized to pay Mr. Martinez directly, but it wasn't required to do so. And fourth, and very significantly, that the document was never supplemented, amended, or modified by a writing signed by Mr. Martinez. That was a requirement. And I think these provisions show the intent, and they're all consistent with a promise to assign in the future.
And when you say he remained on the hook, you've said that several times. Is the point of that he didn't assign the claim? Is that what you're saying? That, well, he only assigned the proceeds?
Yeah. To an extent, Your Honor, that's right. And the point is basically this. These are inconsistent terms, all right, inconsistent concepts. For Mr. Martinez to remain liable for the debt is inconsistent with a present transfer. So he's on the hook or he's liable, and he's paying 18%. And he's paying 18%, I think, in part because the business model recognizes there's some inherent risk involved. I mean, otherwise, I'm not sure how they ever get to 18%. So I think there is that distinction, Your Honor.
But so you're saying he could have assigned the claim? But he just couldn't assign the proceeds?
Yes,
the claim.
Yes. And in fact, there's an attempt, and this is, I think, an important distinction. There is an attempt in the contract, paragraph 4, to actually assign causes of action, right? But I think the court needs to keep in mind this distinction, that when it comes to causes of action, those are assignable under Colorado law. The right to assign a cause of action in a personal injury case arises on the date of the injury. That's recognized, and that's real, right? But for reasons that are unclear, medical lien management never exercised that right. It never stepped into the shoes of Mr. Martinez. It never made the claim against Allstate. It never filed a lawsuit against Ms. Clifford. Arguably, it could have done that if the court found that this satisfies the rule of particularity of summary. So that didn't happen, and medical management could have taken care of a lot of his problems if it had just done that, operating under a clearly set Colorado law. On the other hand is where the problem is. It's where the lawsuit lies. That's the actual proceeds. The proceeds aren't real. The proceeds didn't exist. But yet they based the entire lawsuit on going after proceeds, assigned proceeds that couldn't be assigned at the time.
If it wouldn't throw you off too much, it would help me if you could try to actually explain how you understand the restatements, sections 321 and 330, which
yes.
you all keep talking
yes,
about.
Yes, Your Honor. And I'll begin by saying that the underlying case of In Re Marriage Repair dealt with section 154. And 154, in a way, right about the time that decision was released. The Court of Appeals in this case did a couple of things with respect to the restatement. The restatement second of contracts was published in 1981. And at that time, the following provisions existed. And I think if the court agrees that what this contract is a promise to assign, then I think there's primarily two provisions of the restatement that apply. First is section 321, subsection 2. All right? Now, that section says simply this. A purported assignment of a right expected to arise under a contract not in existence operates only as a promise to assign the right when it arises. What did the Court of Appeals here do with that? Well, the court was pretty vague. It didn't even distinguish between subsection 1 and subsection 2. All it did was cite generally to section 321 for the proposition that an individual can validly assign prior to settlement the sums to be recovered from existing litigation. Really a disconnect between what 321 says and what the court says. The second provision that I think the court will take a look at if it views this contract as a promise to assign is section 330, subsection 1. Now, it's interesting. The Court of Appeals in this case recognize that the old restatement cited by Henry Lachera has been incorporated into the restatement section. It was incorporated into section 321, period. I think it's really incorporated in both 321 and 330. And when you look at the notes to 321, it says you need to look at section 330 to figure out the consequences of a promise to assign. And this is what section 330, subsection 1 says. A contract to make a future assignment of a right or to transfer proceeds to be received in the future by the promisor is not an assignment. And what the Court of Appeals did, all it did, it recognized this provision, but it cited to this section of the restatement with a CF cite. So it distinguished with a CF and nothing more. 330, but it went into no reasoning at all as to why this section of the restatement shouldn't apply with equal force as it did in the LaPera case. And that brings me to section 320, Your Honor, which the Court of Appeals also relied upon. Section 320 is entitled Assignment of Conditional Rights. Here's the problem. Section 320 contemplates an underlying contract of some sort. And why do I say that? It's because if you look at the illustrations to 320, they all involve some sort of underlying contract. And the best example of that is the illustration which deals with a life insurance policy. And the illustration says that if there's a 20-year policy where there's going to be a payout at the end, say it's $10,000, that $10,000 can be assigned, I think in the illustration they say, to B. And that's okay, even though there's a condition embedded in that underlying policy. And the condition, of course, is you have to pay the premiums. The premiums are going to have to be paid, and at the end of that, if the premiums are paid, if that condition in that underlying contract is satisfied, then A, the assignee is going to get the money at the end of that contract. So The Court of Appeals didn't recognize that, but it's interesting what they cited in addition to Section 320. In addition to 320, they cited the Central National Bank v. Spratlin case. 1896 opinion, one page, but it's interesting because Spratlin did not hold that third parties like Allstate can be held liable under an assignment from a fund not yet in existence. And in Spratlin, in fact, there was an underlying contract in existence. And in Spratlin, what was it? There was a fellow named Blaine down in Pueblo who had a contract with the city of Pueblo to regrade into the streets. And Mr. Lang made an assignment of monies that were going to be paid under that contract as he fulfilled the conditions of doing the work to an assignee. So the case that the Court of Appeals cites, right there with Section 320, actually has an underlying contract. And I'll note that the necessity for an underlying contract was also recognized in the Denver v. Jones case that I mentioned earlier, as well as in the Delosier case, where Justice Erickson recognized that assignments need an existing contract. And that makes sense, because it brings certainty to the relationship and to the transaction. So with that, Your Honors, if there's no questions, I would just like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal argument.
You certainly may do so.
Thank you.
Mr. Muggy, whenever you're ready, please.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, my name is Zach Muggy, and as we said earlier, this is Ellen Berger, Mrs. Ellen Berger, and together we represent MediClean Management, Inc., which I will refer to as MLM. Mr. Ridley is correct. This is a case about the doctrine of assignment. It's what we're here for. And the central question here before the Court is whether an assignment of proceeds from an unliquidated tort claim is valid and enforceable in Colorado. The Court of Appeals below, as well as many other courts, have applied the law to facts of this case and similar cases and concluded that yes, an assignment of proceeds from an unliquidated tort claim is valid and is enforceable. The Court of Appeals, based upon that finding and conclusion, went a step further and said because there is a valid assignment, and because Allstate had notice of the assignment but chose for whatever reason to disregard it and instead pay someone else, it remains liable. And this court should affirm the Court of Appeals.
Could you just explain a little bit to me about what this contract really involves here? Was there money advanced for health care services?
There was not, Your Honor, no. This model is very different than, for example, the Oasis case,
yeah.
Which is before this case, different models.
But it seems to recite that there will be some consideration, that is a provision of healthcare services or payments for healthcare services.
Correct. Under this model, Justice Hobbs, what MLM and companies like it do is purchase accounts receivable from medical providers. There is never a dime advanced from MLM to any patient such as Mr. Martinez under this agreement, not a penny. All it does is give MLM some guarantees, some rights, because this is a very risky transaction. It gives it some rights to get paid back. And based on that, it goes and purchases accounts receivable from the medical providers who treat these.
So what did Mr. Martinez enter into here? What benefit did he receive?
Mr. Martinez received a great deal of medical treatment from medical providers who otherwise would not have treated him because he didn't have any health insurance or money to pay.
So he had this in hand when they treated him?
I believe this document was signed, yes, and then after that, medical management agreed to purchase these accounts receivable, and based on that, the provider said, we'll treat you. So it was a tremendous benefit to Mr. Martinez. Without this agreement, without MLM, he doesn't get the treatment he needed for the injuries.
So Allstate paid the proceeds to Mr. Martinez?
Correct, Your Honor.
right? And you're claiming that you stand in his shoes for this purpose.
That's correct.
Having paid the insurance providers for whatever discounted amount you were able to negotiate with them, and you're using the full billed cost, not the discounted rate you paid. I don't exactly understand. Would you just explain to me how that works?
Sure. If Mr. Martinez went and treated with these providers, and they had agreed to just wait, as MLM did in this case, and say, don't pay us, we'll wait till you get your settlement or judgment at the end of the case, then pay us. He would pay for the full amount of their normal bills. And that's the same thing he's doing here. MLM simply goes to the provider and says, we will purchase your account receivable. Of course, it's going to be at a discount. And then MLM takes ownership of that account receivable, stands in the shoes of the medical provider, and then is entitled to collect on that account receivable at the conclusion of Mr. Martinez's case. Yeah,
and the providers give a complete release to Mr. Martinez for any invoiced amounts?
Essentially, yes. They assign their complete ownership in that date of service, in that medical bill, to MLM. And the provider no longer has any interest in it, no ownership interest left, has no rights remaining against Mr. Martinez. But you asked a good question, and I want to make clear that the whole panel understands, the whole court understands, MLM seeks to collect the very same amount that the medical providers themselves are entitled to collect. Nothing more. There is no upcharge. There's no repricing of the bill. Mr. Martinez would have owed Dr. Jones $100 to put a cast on his arm. He owes $100 to MLM for that very same treatment. So there is nothing in there that somehow makes this into a bad deal or upcharges or rips off these patients, as some people mistakenly believe.
But the reason this is profitable for you is you get a better rate from the medical provider. Is that right?
Not entirely accurate, Your Honor, and perhaps I can clarify. The reason why there's a profit margin there is because these medical providers decide to sell the receivable at a discount for whatever amount they decide to sell it for. It's not unlike me going to the corner of 7-Eleven and buying a Coke. We know that the owner of that 7-Eleven didn't pay $2.99 for that Coke that I'm going to pay $2.99 to purchase. Right.
So it's a little bit like the medical insurance company getting a better rate from the medical provider than the patient would if he just dealt with them individually?
I struggle with that, Your Honor, because the medical insurance or the health insurance industry is entirely different. They have, you know, massive contracts with provider groups. They have purchasing power to lower rates. And importantly, in that context, the person who has insurance pays premiums, right, to cover them in the event of this risk. And that's why the health insurance analogy really doesn't fit here. Mr. Martinez never paid for health insurance, for whatever, maybe he couldn't afford it, maybe he didn't qualify, it's unknown. But that's why those cases are so different. When you have health insurance in play, the health insurance company has received some premiums. If Mr. Martinez ever got injured or a claimant never got injured, they would never use those benefits. So that's why it's really different here. The uninsured person comes to MLM after the fact, right? After they've been injured. And they didn't have insurance to begin with. And that's the key there. It's not unlike you going to your doctor and saying, I don't have the money to pay you. Well, you wait till the end.
Well, did your client get the assignment of the cause of action or not?
Your Honor, the agreement that we're talking about contains multiple layers of protection. And it does that because each of these personal injury claims and cases are so unique.
Well, what's the answer to my question?
There is an assignment of the claim, yes, contained in the agreement, yes.
Of the cause of action?
Of the cause of
action. And you didn't attempt, or your client didn't attempt, to go ahead and stand in the shoes of Mr. Martinez?
That's correct, Your Honor. We knew that Mr. Martinez was pursuing that claim. He had an attorney that was doing it for him. So with MLM's permission and authorization, he pursued the claim. But there's also an assignment of the proceeds. And MLM did exercise that right and put Allstate on notice. And that's what we're here today about.
Mr. Muggy, is your claim sound in is it a contract, breach of contract with Allstate?
Your Honor, I'm not entirely clear what the claim sounds in. I believe so. I believe it does create a contract a claim, because whatever rights Mr. Martinez had, we stepped into the shoes. But as the court has seen in many of the other cases that were cited in our brief in the courts out of New York and Idaho and North Carolina who have upheld this type of assignment, causes of action range anywhere from breach of contract to negligence. So to answer your question squarely, I think this claim against Allstate for this violation could be brought under any number of legal grounds.
Well, if it's contract, how does your client have a contract with Allstate?
Because, again, this goes into the future contingent right that Mr. Martinez had the ability to assign the moment the car accident occurred. And then when there was a settlement agreement, there was a contract between Allstate and Mr. Martinez where he released claims, and Allstate and its insured paid Mr. Martinez a certain amount. We still don't know what amount.
But there has to be a contract that Allstate agreed to pay your client, or there has to be a judgment, right? I mean, I'm struggling with how Allstate has an obligation to pay. I mean, it would be like if I owe Justice Ide money and you owe me money, I say pay Justice Ide, she can sue you?
Yes. If I don't pay Justice Ide and I said pay you, you bet.
No, you didn't pay me. I'm just saying that I assigned it, but you never agreed to it. Did she sue you?
They don't have a third party who's given notification of an assignment does not have to agree to it. That's been the case in most of these assignment cases that we have. Mid-States, for example. The third party mill company didn't agree to the assignment. They don't have to. Once you're given notification, it becomes operative. And to answer your question squarely, there was a contract that was between Allstate and Martinez. And by virtue of Martinez assigning his right to certain proceeds to MLM, MLM stepped into Martinez's shoes, and essentially when Allstate did not pay MLM, when it stood in the shoes of Martinez, it's the equivalent of it not paying the obligation it was required to pay under that settlement. So that's the nature of the obligation.
All right,
and I think what we're getting into, and I'd like to just move to it, is really what's the heart of this dispute? All these cases recognize that you can make a valid assignment of a right to proceeds, even if that right is in the future, even if it's contingent, even if it's a potential right to receive proceeds, so long as there's some baseline right in effect to begin with. And all those cases we talked about, there's a contract in place. For example, in Jones, in Provo, there's an employment contract in place. I'm employed with the City and County of Denver. I am under this contract going to receive payment of X amount every 2 weeks. And there's no dispute that the person who has that employment contract can assign to a third party his or her right to receive those future wages. Now we know that's a future or contingent right, right? Because in the meantime, you may get fired, the business may shut down, but that's not good enough to defeat that kind of assignment because there's that baseline legal right formed by the contract. And the key of this case and the key of this model is that there is a similar baseline legal right. And that was created the very moment Allstate's insured, Ms. Clifford, negligently hit Mr. Martinez with her car and caused his injury. The moment that accident occurred, legal claims accrued. Those legal claims...
Let's assume there's no proceeds. What is Mr. Martinez's liability to your client?
So, for example, if he pursued his claim against Allstate's insured, maybe went to trial and lost, got a defense verdict, his obligation is to pay the amount of medical bills.
Plus interest.
It's debatable. MLM has never really enforced that.
What does the contract say?
It says plus 18% interest. They would be entitled to that. But I'm telling you, in practice, it's never come into play. If this person didn't win his case and have money, MLM and companies like it work with these people to come to some solution. But to answer your question, yeah, he remained obligated. But that doesn't somehow negate or invalidate the assignment to begin with. It just provides for a fallback in the event that would happen. Fortunately, it didn't. So because he got the assignment, because he got the settlement, that future contingent...
What I'm trying to get at here, I'm sorry, I've never encountered this before. Why aren't you just suing Mr. Martinez for breach of contract?
We have, Your Honor. MLM did sue Mr. Martinez for breach of contract.
Okay.
And they got a judgment. Unfortunately, he's judgment-proof. Can't pay.
Okay. So you went that far?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Let me ask you a different kind of question, sure. Coming at it from a different end. Now, what if Allstate didn't know anything about this agreement at all?
Then it would have no obligation here, Chief.
So the only thing that makes Allstate have any kind of obligation is their knowledge.
Yeah, it's a two-step process. Once you have a valid assignment, it's incumbent upon MLM or the person, the assignor, the assignee, to put notice, to give notice to those third parties who may owe money. And once they get that notice, you know, we've got great language out of the Court of Appeals in the Mid-States case and the Trevino case, which this court upheld.
Okay. What hypothetically, if Mr. Martinez had entered into lots of these kinds of agreements, you know, companies other than just yours, six or seven more, and sent notice of all of those agreements to Allstate, what should it have done in that instance?
To the extent Allstate has any confusion or feels that it's in a bind on which of those assignments, there may be liens, which of those to honor, which it shouldn't, it should interplead the money under Rule 22 and allow those competing parties to basically make their case to the district court.
But it's your position that as soon as there is, as it receives any kind of notice, that it is bound by to either interplead or to pay to whomever the contract has been made to?
Absolutely. As the Mid-States courts put it, after notice of a valid assignment, payment to the assignor or any person other than the assignee is at the debtor's peril.
Sure.
Now, does not discharge him.
The Court of Appeals found, or maybe it was the trial judge found, that Allstate was, I think the word they used, the bystander to this agreement. I forget which court it was. Could you talk to me about that, please?
Sure. Yeah, that was the district court. And in an assignment action like this, the third party debtor is always a bystander. And that's the very purpose of getting this assignment right. Right? It's not a direct contract between MLM and Allstate. Or in the Mid-States case, the milk company and the person to whom the rights were assigned. That's the very purpose of assignment. There's always going to be a debtor who is the bystander. And that's the purpose. You put that debtor on notice, and then instead of paying the original party, they then have to pay the assignee.
Could I ask, I was a little surprised at the just sort of boldness of the statement, and maybe I misunderstood when you said you seem to challenge that there is any dispute about the fact that one can assign an asset that has not yet come into existence. And I guess maybe I could ask this a couple of ways. Do you think the restatement would agree with that? And if so, maybe you could explain why. And I understand that that might be the case with regard to a contract between the assignor and the assignee, but isn't the question whether it's really an assignment such that it would bind a third party?
Yeah, and I think that really gets to the heart of this. Is there a valid assignment? And I say there is. In the case, and I just liken this. This is analogous to all the cases that have said, yes, this is a valid assignment of a future or contingent right to receive payment. Because in those cases, there's that baseline legal right. And what I'm contending is that the legal claims that Mr. Martinez obtained the moment Ms. Clifford negligently hit him are the equivalent of an employment contract in the other context. It gives that legal right, that legal interest from which Mr. Martinez had an expectation that he would recover some proceeds.
I was just going to say, are you indicating there's no distinction then between assigning the claim and assigning proceeds from the claim?
I'm not suggesting that, Your Honor, although I would submit to you that based on the fact that Colorado allows the assignment of a claim, in order to reach that, there has to be some claim in existence, right? Some legal right has to exist in order for it to be assigned. And so I think that feeds directly into the analysis of whether you can assign the proceeds. It makes little sense to me that we allow the assignment of the claim, but we wouldn't allow proceeds from that claim, because you're thereby recognizing the validity of that legal claim itself.
Mr. Martinez can only assign what he has. He has a right to be paid by Allstate.
Correct.
He was paid by Allstate. So why, if Allstate is standing in Mr. Martinez's shoes, does it have a cause of action against Allstate?
Why, if MLM is standing in the shoes?
Right.
Because
if MLM is standing in the shoes of Martinez, Martinez has been paid. His cause of action is against Allstate has been extinguished.
Because when he assigned his right to that money to MLM, he no longer had that right.
Sure, but he's the one who's cheating you, in essence. I mean, obviously, by not paying.
I don't disagree.
So you all don't have anything more than what he gave you.
Right.
What he gave you was the right to be paid, and he was paid. And then he took the money, evidently, or spent it, or whatever. But you don't have anything more than that, because he was paid, therefore, by extension, you were paid.
I mean, that's true, but because he assigned that to MLM, and MLM stands in his shoes, there's no dispute MLM wasn't paid. And so when Allstate didn't pay MLM, it was the equivalent of Allstate not
sure,
paid altogether.
But if you and MLM, if you and Martinez are the same, by virtue of this, you, that is Martinez, MLM, were paid. I mean, it would seem to me like maybe what, well, ask me this, why wouldn't you have a cause of action against Martinez, not only for failure to pay, but for theft, or something along those lines?
I think we probably do, but that doesn't mean we also don't have a claim against Allstate.
But what gives you standing, or what is the theory that puts you in a better position as against the insurance company than Martinez is?
It's not a better position. It's the same position.
It is a better position because he's been paid.
Right, but consistent with longstanding law, I mean, after notice of a valid assignment, payment to the assignor, in this case, Martinez, or any person other than the assignee is at the debtor's peril and does not discharge him from liability to the assignee. So that's directly out of Mid-States. I mean, that's the law of the land, that if a third party who owes money is notified that you need to pay someone else and they fail to pay that other person, their debt to that person is not discharged.
All right. Excuse me. All right. Thank you.
So I just want to be clear, because I think that's really the epicenter, if you will, of this dispute. We all the cases agree, longstanding cases agree, that if you have that baseline legal interest, whether it's through an employment contract, there's an example in the restatements that says you don't even have to have a contract. It contemplates a continuing business relationship. As long as you have that relationship, those baseline rights, then you can make an assignment of future proceeds, even if they're contingent, even if they're potential proceeds.
At the time this particular agreement was entered into, you say Mr. Martinez had a cause of action against the tortfeasor and her insurer. Do we know who these people were at the time this was entered into? I mean, I don't think I'm seeing Allstate mentioned anywhere in this particular contract.
Sure. So, they did know. Obviously, the moment Ms. Clifford hit Mr. Martinez is when the claim accrued, and so he knew it was Ms. Clifford. I'm not sure if he knew at that moment that Allstate was her insurance company. But I would call your attention to, you know, we've got the agreement itself in which the assignment was created. And then with respect to any questions on what that entailed, MLM sent to Allstate this notice of lien or assignment of proceeds, and in that notice it listed Mr. Martinez's name, his address, the date of the accident, Ms. Clifford's name, it lists Allstate, the claim number, and gives instructions to pay MLM. So,
and that document that you're pointing to came into existence after this agreement was entered into, or I'm just trying to understand the sequence.
Sure. Yes, Your Honor. This document, which is the lien and security agreement, the assignment agreement,
right,
which is at the record at page 71, is the document under which Mr. Martinez assigned his right to these proceeds to MLM. In order for Allstate to have any obligation to pay, of course, MLM had to notify Allstate. And that's what this document, this notice, did. And this is at the record at page 72. And this record then says, here's all the details, Allstate. And in addition, it attached the account statement listing Mr. Martinez, all of the providers who treated him, the dates of service, the amounts of the treatment. All of this information was sent to Allstate. So at the moment that this document, that's undisputed, that Allstate received this notice, at the moment Allstate received this notice, it became obligated to pay MLM in the event such an obligation arose through settlement or judgment.
So, counsel, can I just follow up on that, though? I mean, you concede that Allstate is not mentioned in the actual assignment document.
Certainly. But there's no requirement that it be listed in that document because Mr. Martinez assigned his rights to the proceeds from his personal injury claims. So whether it's Allstate whether it's his bank, whether it's anybody else who might owe him money based out of those claims, this assignment would operate the same against them. So in other words, this assignment that he gave...
So it doesn't matter who might owe him the money.
Correct. This would apply to any number of people who might owe him money as a result of these claims. And so that's why there's no requirement that Allstate or anyone else, for that matter, be listed expressly. And to the extent there's any question about that, again, this notice, you know, filled in those gaps so that when Allstate received
this... But you're saying this document here is explicit notice that they have to pay over to your client, not Mr. Martinez.
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, where does it say that?
Well, it says... here in the middle of the document, this is the record of 72, it says, issue all payments to Medical Lien Management, Inc. And above that, in the preamble, it describes what the nature of the right is.
Well, it asserts a lien
right.
And then the proceeds.
Or assignment of proceeds. And it says assignment.
But you're saying the settlement check needed to be, or part of the settlement check needed to be mailed straight to your...
That's
line.
Correct.
And you think that's what that language provides?
I think the language that says...
Other than just a general notice that there's a lien on proceeds that Mr. Martinez may have to cover.
I think the language that says you are hereby notified that MLM has been granted an assignment of proceeds with an instruction that says issue all payments to Medical Lien Management did put Allstate on notice and did require Allstate to issue payment at least to the amount MLM was owed. Directly to him.
I don't see that language in there. And I don't see how the amount is figured out that Allstate has to pay.
How the amount is figured out?
Yeah.
Because attached to this notice was the account statement. This account statement says total account balance, $9,938.
Okay.
This was attached.
Can I take you back to the question of assignment of proceeds that have not yet come into existence?
Please.
Is it your position then that the Lapeira case and its reliance on the restatement as it existed then was just wrong?
Yes.
Right. So you don't think the restatement, that's what the restatement then or now says?
No, and I think part of the source of the confusion back then under the old restatement, the 1930s version, in section 154, which is what the Lapeira division relied upon, mm-hmm. expressly incorporated the garnishment proceedings, and I think that the case was really factually driven, and because there was a competing garnishment in Lapeira, that was the linchpin of that decision. So under 320, which is the restatement now, and that now would be a good time to answer your question. What does that? So I'll go ahead. And
if
do
you
that.
Can, please.
I can. I think I can.
This might take some work to straighten me out.
I don't think it needs much work, but I'll give it my best. The restatement section 320, it says, and I'm going to paraphrase because I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says, and I quote, the fact that a right is created by, ellipsis, the fact that a right is otherwise conditional does not prevent its assignment before the condition occurs. And that's the key here. That condition, the conditional payment, is the settlement or the judgment. Just because it has not occurred, according to Section 320, does not prevent its assignment before it happens.
And so you'd read a condition of a right to be so broad as to include a right that has not yet come into existence?
In this context, yes. And the reason I say that, Your Honor, is because there was a legal right in existence. And that's the key here. The legal right was that Mr. Martinez had colorable legal claims against Ms. Clifford. Because those rights were in existence, this type of assignment of future proceeds is valid and enforceable. If that legal right had never come into existence in the first place, by way of legal claims, then we wouldn't be here today. In other words, Mr. Martinez never was in a car accident and came to MLM and said, I hereby give to you any and all proceeds that I may someday get. That's not a valid assignment, because that baseline legal right is not yet in existence. So that's where I just think we have this source of disagreement. Allstate refuses to acknowledge or accept that legal claim then made this type of assignment permissible. And that is contrary to what the Court of Appeals below held, and that's contrary to the great weight of authority of all those cases that we've cited. You know, cases from New York, Maryland, Nebraska, Nevada, North Carolina, South Carolina, Idaho, Texas, all of those courts have had this very issue in front of them. And they all concluded that yes, this type of assignment of proceeds, even if it's unliquidated, is valid and enforceable. Ms. Ridley attempted, in response to Justice Ide's questions, to distinguish those by saying, no, those cases really don't apply because the claims in those cases were against the attorney and or the assignor. That's not a distinction. Those are two separate issues. The first question is this assignment valid? The answer is yes. The second question is, if the assignment is valid, against whom can it be enforced? And at least under Colorado law, question two is easily answered. Right? We've got long-standing case law that says if you have a valid assignment, it can be enforced against anyone with notice. So respectfully, Justice Ide, that was no distinction to those cases. Those cases are directly on board. They answered this question squarely. And they all came to the same conclusion, which is the same conclusion that our Court of Appeals reached. Allstate relies heavily upon this Westbrook case out of Ohio. And as we said in the brief, their decision, and Justice Hood, in response to one of your questions, their decision was primarily driven by public policy concerns that somehow allowing this type of assignment would create more litigation, would somehow de-incentivize litigants from settling. None of those concerns are legitimate, at least in Colorado. And we know that because for decades, Colorado has allowed the assignment of the tort claim itself. So if these public policy concerns were really present in Colorado, surely they would have reared their ugly head by now. They haven't. So there aren't going to be additional public policy concerns that come about just because we now allow proceeds to also be assigned. And so the dissent in that Westbrook case was spot on. It addressed this issue. It said the majority simply ignored longstanding authority that talked about equitable assignments, which is, you know, this type of assignment. So I submit to this court that the dissent got it right. I submit to this court that the Court of Appeals below got it right, and that this type of assignment is really important to the people of the state of Colorado. The last count showed that there were 750,000 people who did not have insurance. For those people who get in an accident and need medical treatment, this is the best alternative. Because otherwise, they may not be able to get treatment, they may have to get on Medicaid, they may have to go to hospitals and ERs, which ultimately is a burden on the taxpayers. So this type of alternative is good for them. And we know that because the plaintiff's lawyers use this model. They signed the agreement. His lawyer here signed the agreement. So it's very important that this type of assignment be upheld and affirmed in the state of Colorado. I see that my time is up, so unless the court has any additional questions, I will sit down, but I ask this court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision below. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Money. Mr. Ridley, you have about 4.5 minutes left, sir.
A few points in rebuttal, Your Honor. First of all, the 18% interest issue, the question really was never answered. How can there be an 18% interest provision if this was actually an assignment? It doesn't make sense. Nor does the answer that, in terms of the business model that Justice Hobbs, you had questions about, the answer that we never enforce it. Well, if it's never enforced, why did they obtain a default judgment against Mr. Martinez and then pursue it to the point where they were able to determine that he was judgment-proof? I'm just suggesting there may be more to this business model that meets the eyes, but then again, we don't have a good record. And on the record issue and on the public policy, when it comes to facts like 750,000 people, this is the best model. There's no record on that. And I would submit that this is the type of fact-finding that might be appropriate for the General Assembly if they were to decide to expand our current hospital lien statute in the way that North Carolina has done. And one of the cases that's cited is the Charlotte-Mecklenburg case. North Carolina is very broad lien statute. Basically allows anybody doing anything in healthcare to go ahead and collect. We don't have that. So I don't think we have a good record on this public policy issue. But I do think that we judicially recognize public policy concerns as set forth in the West Broad case are worth serious consideration, especially the litigation concerns.
Mr. Ridley, I have another question that's not in the record. as long as we're going there, which is, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but so your client got the notice of lien or assignment of proceeds and chose evidently just to disregard it. Either you just disregarded it or didn't get it, but you seem to be operating under the assumption that you got it. And so you chose instead of paying an LLM to pay Mr. Martinez. To the extent that you feel comfortable answering this, I'd like to know what the thought process was there and how it fits, if at all, into your argument that this wasn't a valid assignment.
Okay. Your Honor, there is no record, and I don't know the answer, but I can give you some explanations.
Sure.
First of all, Allstate has a quasi-fiduciary duty. That's a very well-defined duty in this state. And so it's faced with a decision. Do I pay Mr. Martinez and satisfy my well-established quasi-fiduciary duty, or do I go ahead and pay medical lien management, in which case maybe I take care of them? But if Mr. Martinez isn't satisfied, what happens? He can continue to pursue our insured, Ms. Clifford, and then Ms. Clifford can turn around and sue us for bad faith. And bad faith is, obviously, we suffer no shortage of bad faith litigation in the state. Two, if you read this all together, the notice had to be signed by Mr. Martinez. It wasn't. So Allstate gets this document, Your Honor. They don't know if it's valid. They don't know if these charges are justified. They don't know if there's any disagreement vis-a-vis representations made by medical lien management. So the decision had to make, and most importantly, go into the issue, the fundamental issue here. At the time they get this notice and the contract, there is still nothing there. They haven't agreed to settle. So the fundamental problem hasn't changed with that notice. I want to end, if I may, to come back to Justice Hobbs' concern about the restatement. Under Mr. Muggy's proposal, Section 321, Subsection 2330 would be eviscerated. It served no purpose. It would be superfluous. That doesn't make sense. But the most eloquent statement as to why this rule exists was found in the restatement first under Section 154 notes, and it says, it is for reasons of policy that the effect of an attempted transfer of a right which has not yet arisen is limited. In the nature of things, it is impossible to make a person owner of a right which does not exist. But even when a future right which has been the subject of attempted transfer does arise, the assignment does not make the assignee owner of the right unless the contract under which the right exists when the assignment is made. That is the best statement as to why the Court of Appeals should be reversed and the trial court dismissal affirmed.
Okay, thanks. I'm understanding there are no questions. Thanks.
Thank you,
both of you. Mr. Ridley, Mr. Muggy, we appreciate your arguments today. The court's in recess now until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.